Well, it's a very good morning from me, John Fradgley, with you for the next half an hour here on your nice and easy listening radio station for CRB. Of course, it's The Law on You, Tuesday morning, and your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 9:30. All we need you to do is jump on the telephone, 55208888. That number again, 55208888. Don't forget we have our email address. You can send us an email and we can give you an answer to your question next week. That's talkback@4crb.com. That's talkback, all in lowercase, one word, @4crb.com. Don't forget, if you're ringing from south of the Tweed River, you'll need to put 07 in front of our number. That's 55208888. A little bit of a disaster last week with our program. Unfortunately, we were forced into broadcasting remotely because of the lockdown, and unfortunately, a few gremlins got into the phone system, which made it for quite a difficult program. We did actually have Lindsay and Bill who rang in last week, and unfortunately I wasn't able to speak with either of them because of the issues with the phone system. So Lindsay and Bill, if you're out there and you're listening today and you'd like to ring back with your queries, please do so. I'd love to be able to provide an answer to whatever the question was that you were seeking advice on. But in the meantime, the phones are open. There are no callers online at the present time, so all you need to do is give us a call, 55208888, and we'll deal with your problem as soon as we can. In the meantime, a few things that I might just remind you about, or maybe just one, because we've just had our first caller come in, and that is just a reminder that from the 26th of July, that's the 26th of last month, the police have deployed cameras to detect mobile phone use in Queensland. And they're out there operating, but you fortunately will not be fined until the 1st of November. The fines will start from that date. In the intervening period, they're going to be sending letters to people who are detected doing the wrong thing. But certainly a very bad habit to get into if you're prone to use your phone or text message or whatever. And these days with the use of Bluetooth, etc., there really shouldn't be any excuse for using your phone. And probably the best thing to do with it is to put it in the centre console and lock it away in your car so that you can't use it while you're driving. So just remember that from the 1st of November, those fines will be operating in Queensland. I'm not sure of the date in New South Wales, but the same legislation has been introduced in New South Wales, and their period of grace may have already expired, so you may be subject to fines down there. But enough of that. We'll say a very good morning to Christina. Good morning, Christina. How are you today?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. How can we help you today?
Well, I have a question for the lawyer, please.
That's the one you're speaking to.
Oh, right. okay, look, my husband and I needed to get new wills done. Our previous wills were 10 years old, and we approached a law firm and made a booking, and I told them that we did have previous wills, so they asked us whether we could just drop them in so that they could have them ready for the lawyer to look at, which I did. And before we had our first consultation, we were given a quote in an email of, do you want me to say the price?
Yes, that's fine.
Yeah, of $700 plus GST. When we did our wills 10 years ago, we paid around the $500 mark. So we kind of thought, well, 10 years of, you know, of inflation and so on, that sounds about right. So we went for our meeting with the lawyer, and we were there for a couple of hours. And at the end of it, she asked us, what were you charged? And I showed her the email, and I said, well, this is what we... Sorry, what were we quoted? I showed her the email, and she sort of ummed a bit, and she sort of said, well, there's a bit more work than I kind of first thought. She says, but I'll have a word with my boss, and we'll see what we can do. And then the next day, I got another email saying that the quote was now $2,300 plus GST. So, yeah, we were shocked and taken back, and rang up and sort of said, you know, well, this is what we were quoted originally. Why is it now this price? And we were just told, well, there's a lot more work, and I had a word with my boss, and this is what the price is. So we said, well, look, we can't afford to go ahead with that. That's just too much. So I says, look, we'll just call it quits. I'll come in and get my wheels back, and left it at that. And then we then phoned again and just sort of, you know, we were sort of querying, you know, why have you charged us this much? Because we wanted to get our wheels done. You know, it was something that was troubling us. And anyway, they wouldn't budge on the price, and because we said, well, look, we'll just have to leave it, they wanted to then charge us for their time. And after sort of to-ing and fro-ing, they were sort of initially wanted to charge us $500 per hour. And we just said, oh, well, this is ridiculous. And then we sort of said, well, look, you know, we can't afford to go ahead with this. This is what we were quoted. This is why we came for the consultation. Anyway, so we settled on that they were charged $200. But
sorry, how much did they charge in the end?
Well, they've sent us an invoice for $200 to cover their time. But we still feel a bit aggrieved by that. You know, we were misled.
I think unfortunately, Christina, the process has not been handled as well as it should have been. I think the way that you really should approach it is this, and I do know that this is the system that our office uses. We say, look, this is the cost for a standard wheel. This is the cost for the starting cost for a complex or testamentary trust will, for example. Our initial consultation fee is $550 plus GST, but you will be advised at the end of that our consultation what the costs are going to be, so that the client has the opportunity of saying whether they wish to proceed or not, and we can also get a better idea of what is actually going to be involved in doing it. Now, I think, unfortunately, the cart has gone before the horse in your situation, in that they've quoted you for doing the work before they've actually seen what is involved. And that also, of course, involves what goes on in the interview, because you may, for example, have at the moment standard wills, which were perfectly fine for you 10 years ago but are no longer any good now. So, look, I think, unfortunately, the process has not been handled as well as it should have been. But I think probably in fairness to the lawyer, the $200 fee for, if you said you spent a couple of hours with them, the $200 for the time and presumably the advice they gave you during that period, I think is probably a reasonable outcome. But as I say, it's okay. Just the way it's been done. I think you should have been told at the start, this is what it's going to cost for a 1 hour interview, and then at the end of that time we will tell you what you need in terms of will, so that you can make a decision as to whether you want to go to the interview, and then secondly you can make a decision whether you want to proceed from there. Because the other thing too, of course, Christina, is that the wills you had from 10 years ago, depending on your circumstances, may have still been perfectly adequate. They may have just needed to be read to say, no, look, these still suit your circumstances, so you don't need to worry. So I think, unfortunately, it's just been a case of not handling the booking process and the interview process as well as might have been done. All right, then?
Okay, all right then. Thank you so much.
Okay, Christina, all the very best. And the time on 4CRB just keeps rolling along. It's just coming up to 15 minutes past nine. And we say a very good morning to Harry. G'day, Harry. How are you today? Harry, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you, Harry?
Not too bad, thanks.
That's good. How can I help?
I've got three married daughters. Two are millionaires. The third one's just a genuine hard worker. At the moment, my will, I've left it, divided it up into three parts distribution. If I alter it to just one to the youngest daughter, would that be up to a challenge?
Look, It potentially could. It depends on the circumstances, Harry, but handled correctly, no one can give you a guarantee that your will not be challenged, but handled correctly, it would certainly be possible to set it up in a way where the chances of a challenge are minimised markedly. So there's a number of things that can be done. I mean, one of the most obvious ones is the consideration of the financial well-being or otherwise of each of your children, so what their needs might be. And obviously you're approaching this from a needs perspective. You're saying, well, I've got two daughters who are millionaires and I've got one daughter who's a battler. And so I think that I should make greater provision for the daughter who is not as financially well off as the others. So, I mean, that's a sound starting point. The ideal thing to do, if it's possible, and of course it's not always possible to do this, would be to perhaps meet with your other two daughters, and I would suggest individually, and just say to them, look, you know, this is what I'm thinking of doing. You guys are pretty comfortable, whereas your sisters, you know, your third sister is obviously struggling financially, and so I'm minded to make greater provision for her, or I'm going to provide that the whole of my estate go to her rather than to rather than providing anything to you. And it's not to say that I love you any less. It's just simply that I look at it purely on the basis of financial need. Now, I have found over the years that where those conversations take place, it's amazing how often that other child will say, yeah, look, Dad, I totally understand that, and I think it's reasonable that you look after Jane or whatever her name might be, and I'm totally comfortable with it. Now, it doesn't happen always. Sometimes you do get children who, for whatever reason, believe that the estate just simply should be divided equally. But that's one of the thoughts that I would have in approaching this problem for you. I think the starting point, Harry, is to get some really good advice from a lawyer who practices in this area of asset protection estate planning, to get some practical ideas of how you can do it. One of the things that would be certainly advisable for you to do as part of the will-making process would be to do a statement of testamentary wishes, which explains in full detail why you're making greater provision for daughter number three rather than the other two, because you need to remember that when the will ultimately is dealt with, the best person to give evidence about why you've done what you've done is, of course, no longer there, because you've passed on. So the preparation of a statement of wishes, which clearly articulates the reasoning behind the decisions you've made, and if those decisions are soundly made, will certainly provide fairly strong evidence to a court or indeed to a law firm acting for wealthy children who are trying to challenge a will. The other thing to bear in mind too is that the courts are increasingly becoming less tolerant of claimants where they don't believe there is any merit in the claim. And certainly the claim by a millionaire child against a child who is a battler would be one of those circumstances that the court would look at. And the child challenging the will very well may end up facing an order for costs to pay not only the cost of their own costs of challenging, but also the costs of the estate in defending the proceeding. So there's a lot that can be done, but there is no one who can give you a guarantee that a will not be challenged. It's simply not possible.
Okay, thank you very much for the advice.
Okay, Harry, all the very best. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 20 minutes past 9. The Law and You is the program. The telephone number is 55208888. If you have a question or a query, that's 55208888. Just to call out again to Lindsay and Bill who called last week and because of the telephone problems weren't able to get through. So if you have a question or a query, give us a call. That's 55208888. I'd love to deal with those questions that we weren't able to deal with last week. Now, while we're waiting for some more calls to come in, just a couple of things to remind you about. Don't forget that if you're resident in Queensland, the debate on the voluntary assisted dying bill in Queensland is due to take place next month. I think from memory, September was the date set aside for that legislation to be debated. And the Queensland Law Society, through its committee system, certainly made some very comprehensive representations to the government of Queensland in relation to this legislation, which is certainly very polarising. There are people who believe that you should have the right to make an end-of-life decision, and there are those who are diametrically opposed to that view. And I think the important thing is that each end of the debate needs to respect the views of the other, but above all, respect the person. People hold genuine beliefs in relation to these issues, and I don't think that either should be attacking the other simply because they hold a view which doesn't agree with yours. Now, the Law Society considered this legislation from the point of view of estate planning, and they came to the view that the existing laws in relation to coercion in accessing voluntary dying schemes or accessing a voluntary dying scheme were sufficient, and therefore what the bill provides in terms of mitigation of coercion was quite adequate. And in view of the fact that they consider those mitigations on coercion or the safeguards to mitigate coercion are adequate, the Law Society, from that perspective, feels reasonably comfortable with the legislation. One of the things that people need to bear in mind is that none of this is going to have any effect on the common law rule, which is currently in operation in Queensland. And that's the rule of forfeiture, which operates to exclude a person responsible for the coercion which results in a person's death from financially benefiting from that death. Now, that follows on from the law which says that where a person is criminally responsible for the death of another, and that death is a material fact in the vesting of property in favour of that person, then the person's interest in that property is forfeited. And so that, of course, is something that needs to be borne in mind in terms of this legislation, that it's certainly, if people are thinking they're going to coerce their elderly parent into taking part in the voluntary assisted dying process, not only are the safeguards in place so thorough as to make the likelihood of that occurring at the coercion of someone else, if it did for any reason happen, there is absolutely no financial benefit to the person who may have been responsible for the coercion. And in fact, indeed, there could be criminal responsibility as well. So that's a good thing. But enough of that. We have Kevin on the phone. Hi, Kevin. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
That's good. How can we help?
John, it's regarding superannuation and probate.
Sure.
Is a person's superannuation included when assessing if probate needs to be applied for? Just by way of background, my wife and I, our assets are all in joint names. We have bank accounts with around $15,000 in them. Mm. But the superannuation, of course, is in my name only.
Right.
So on my passing, would the superannuation component be come into the calculations when assessing if probate needs to be applied for?
Well, the first thing that superannuation is actually outside of your estate, Kevin. So that's the first thing you need to bear in mind. How the distribution of superannuation is determined is according to how you may have nominated your superannuation to be dealt with. Is this
I've nominated my wife as the as a beneficiary of my superannuation.
Right, and is that under a non-lapsing binding death benefit nomination? Is it a self-managed fund or a retail fund?
Industry retail. fund.
Retail fund. Okay, so what you need to see is whether you can put in place a binding, non-lapsing death benefit nomination in favour of your wife. And if you can do that, then all that needs to be produced to the superannuation trustee is a copy of your death certificate and the total amount will be paid. If you're not able to do a binding, non-lapsing death benefit nomination, but the fund only permits you to do a binding death benefit nomination, then under most superannuation deeds for industry or retail funds, they need to be renewed every 3 years. And so you just need to bear in mind that that renewal needs to be done. The other alternative people sometimes do is that they put the binding death benefit nomination or the death benefit nomination in favour of their legal personal representative, which would get the benefit payable into the estate. And in those circumstances, the trustee of the super fund may require probate of the will. But if you put in place a non-lapsing binding death benefit nomination in favour of your wife, your super will certainly go to your wife, and if that's what your will provides, you've got a will which says, I leave everything to my wife, well, all your other assets in addition to your super will also end up with her as well.
Yes, right. I have both the will states assets, everything goes to my wife, mm-hmm. and the superannuation states that she's the nominated beneficiary
yep.
of the superannuation funds. Yeah.
Well, I would just talk to whoever you deal with in terms of your fund, just to make sure that it is a binding death benefit, binding non-lapsing death benefit nomination. And if you can't put in place a binding non-lapsing death benefit nomination, then put in place a binding death benefit nomination, and just check with them how often you have to renew it. And then make sure you've got in place a something in your diary to remind you that if it does have to be renewed every 3 years, that you do it. And I would suggest you put it in your diary for the date it's due, each day for a week prior, and then each week for probably three or four weeks prior. So there's absolutely no chance that you can get to that magic date and say, oh, crikey, I forgot. And then it falls out of your mind and you forget all about it. And you're back in a situation where it would be the trustee of the super fund who'd be making the decision about where the super was paid to.
All right. Okay, you've been very helpful. I appreciate that.
No trouble at all. Kevin, all the very best. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 28 minutes or just past 28 minutes past 9. We'll have the local news, of course, coming up at 9.30. Just one other little item, a reminder about the New South Wales tax authority increases or tax increases for foreign home buyers. They've put a surcharge on stamp duty and also a surcharge on annual land tax. Now, there is a bit of a trap in this, in that if you have a trust, a discretionary trust, for example, that has the possibility of foreign beneficiaries, you very well could be trapped by that land tax surcharge. So unfortunately, the cutoff date for the amendments was December last year. So it is a bit of an issue, a bit of a live issue, but it's mainly one that will affect people from overseas. So, but nonetheless, there is a problem there. We have another caller online, Faye, but unfortunately, Faye, we're a little bit close to the news. So if you don't mind, if you just wait online there, I'll take that call off air as soon as the program is finished. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning for another program of The Law and You. I'll look forward to being back with you, of course, next Tuesday morning. But as always, until then, it's goodbye and God bless.